This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to our weekly Q&A with Layla as part of our Intelligent Medicine podcast series. We're answering your questions. Your questions can be sent to us at radioprogram@AOL.com. Questions related to nutrition, supplements, overall health questions, lifestyle. They're all grist for the mill for our weekly Q&A with Layla, as you'll soon see. So what's our next question?
Okay, we have an email from Karen. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I have heard you advise keeping vitamins in the refrigerator, but I have a question. Would the moisture in the refrigerator be harmful to vitamins?
Well, aren't we keeping the bottles closed?
Yes. I wonder if Karen means any condensation that may occur?
Well, okay. I mean, that's how you create rain, basically, is when you take something that where there's moisture in the air and you cool it, there's going to be some condensation. Mm. So let's say, you know, you've got a moist interior of a bottle of vitamins. I'm trying to answer this seriously because one way of answering this would be to say, what are you kidding? You keep the bottles closed. No, there's no moisture coming in. You know, the stuff that's sitting open in your refrigerator could get moisture in it. You know?
Right.
But like a little physics experiment, a bottle of vitamins that you have open at room temperature, it may contain some moisture or humidity from the air. And when you put it in the refrigerator, that moisture in the bottle could condense.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the word?
You know,
and
condense,
you know, and then, you know, moisturize your vitamins.
Right.
I guess that's a possibility.
Yeah.
So, but it's kind of a remote possibility.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other thing that mostly when vitamins are potentially affected by moisture, many of them have what are called desiccants.
Yes.
So what the temptation
is... And the cotton.
The cotton and the desiccants are in there to keep the vitamins from getting crumbly and soggy, basically.
Yes.
So, you know, the temptation is you open a bottle of vitamins and you see like this little stupid little plastic things and you see these like little packets and you say, let me get rid of those things because God forbid I'm going to reach in the vitamin thing and I'm going to swallow the plastic thing. You know, or I'll just, you know, put the vitamin bottle up to my mouth and I'll swallow one of those little packets, you know.
Yeah.
And it's got in there some kind of silica or something
to
absorb moisture. No, keep it in there.
Keep it in there.
Keep it in there.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Keep it in there because that's going to help that.
Exactly.
So that's, you know, I think probably the best way to handle it. So,
And
let's go back to why we're, you know, I said this, keep everything in the refrigerator.
Well, especially in summer.
Yeah, first of all, you know, you probably could get away with keeping your minerals, you know, out because they're less likely to degrade than your vitamins.
Right.
Why? Minerals are more like rocks and vitamins are more like, you know, vegetable material.
And they could be heat and light.
And light sensitive.
Sensitive, right.
And especially, you know, things like oils, they're potentially very susceptible to oxidation.
Mm-hmm.
So, but by default, I keep everything in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I do too, especially in the summertime. Primarily, and for a lot of people, a lot of people's homes are warmer in the winter if they like to be cozy and all of that. You still may want to keep it in. You still may want to keep your vitamins in the refrigerator. That may be a good idea.
And then you know maybe don't keep them on a on a windowsill or something.
No. Don't do that in direct sunlight or anything like that.
And many of the bottles are opaque, you know, so that protecting the vitamins inside.
Okay. We have two similar questions here from Charlie. Dr. Hoffman, is red rice yeast safe to take with Cholestapure? And from Denise, what red rice yeast does Dr. Hoffman recommend for cholesterol?
So the product is called Cholestipure.
Cholestipure, yeah. Charlie, I wonder if Charlie's confused. He's asking if red rice yeast is safe to take with Cholestipure.
Oh.
He might mean something else then, if Cholestipure is the actual supplement containing red rice yeast.
I don't think Cholestipure contains red rice yeast.
No. It's probably something with panethene.
Yeah, Cholestipure is made by Pure Encapsulations, which is a good company. And it contains phytosterols.
Oh, good.
And vitamin C. So that's all that's in Cholestipure. So let's talk about what that is. Cholestipure contains prized phytosterols like beta-testosterol, campesterol, and stigmasterol, and brassicasterol. These are, by the way, the same beta-testosterol that is used for prostate formulas. But these plant sterols have actually been shown to sort of bind to cholesterol in the gastrointestinal tract and conduct it out. That's sort of the mechanism by which they work. They don't work in a way similar to statin drugs, which prevent the synthesis of cholesterol by blocking the enzyme HMG-CoA reductase, which is a key step in the production of cholesterol. So they work in different ways. So you actually will get a one, like a double whammy on cholesterol elimination, or you one eliminates the cholesterol, the other one prevents its production, and they're perfectly compatible to take together. Studies show that plant phytosterols somewhat reduce cholesterol. I sent you a big review of that.
Remember, that just went on and on.
Recently, a European study group involving many countries looked at a lot of natural agents to lower cholesterol, and what they the conclusions they came to were that plant sterols do work to lower cholesterol. Of course, red yeast rice is actually the way that statin drugs got discovered. It's a certain properties of red yeast rice, which, by the way, is used to make Peking duck. Did you know that? Yeah, that's.
Oh.
I'm sorry. It's actually red rice yeast. It's actually a fungal product.
Red rice yeast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe it's actually a fungal product.
Okay.
So what that is a it yields something that became the first statin, which is called Mevacor.
Oh.
And Mevacor no longer used because it's a weak statin and it's too cheap. So any drug that's too cheap, they don't use anymore because it's off patent. They have more expensive drugs.
More expensive drugs to sell you, yes.
But you actually are getting a dose of Mevacor when you take red yeast rice or red rice yeast.
Okay.
So,
and just like with any statin, you would still want to monitor liver function.
You have to, because there are...
Even though red yeast rice is over-the-counter, I could tell you a couple of occasions where I've had a new patient or client come in and they're concerned about liver enzymes, and I look at the supplements that they're taking. I say, well, how long are you taking red yeast rice? Oh, for about a couple of years. Well, this could be a reason. Stop taking it. Let's see what happens.
And you see liver abnormalities.
Yeah. They come down.
However, you know, the same people who have high cholesterol often have fatty liver. So it could be part of that is that they're eating the wrong food.
Right.
And that could be causing fatty liver. But coming back to the things that work for lowering cholesterol that they believed worked, one that they didn't think worked was polycosanol.
Oh,
they did not think that it worked. So polycosanol has been touted for lowering cholesterol. It doesn't really work.
I remember back in the day.
Yeah.
But I remember somebody specifically saying polycosanol will only work a little bit better if you take aspirin with it.
Oh, whatever.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's...
Part of the problem was that it was based largely on Cuban research.
Uh-huh.
It's made from sugarcane, so that's a major industry in Cuba still.
Okay.
And, you know, what it teaches you is that you have to look sometimes at the provenance of research. And certain countries may not have the highest standards for, shall we say, scientific veracity. And so they tested that proposition using the same experimental protocol, the same material, the Cuban material, and they tested it in Scandinavia. It didn't work.
Huh.
So, you know, why does it work, you know, below a certain latitude and not above a certain latitude? No, it's just didn't, the research was probably either bad research or they fudged it.
Huh.
Yeah, to sell a product.
To sell a product.
Because they're looking for foreign currency exchange. You know,
sure, sure.
That country is desperate for foreign currency exchange.
Wow.
So anyway, it didn't reflect well on their research. Mm-hmm. So the other that works is bergamot. Bergamot was highly rated, and we like bergamot.
It's that beautiful fruit-scented oil in Earl Grey tea, my favorite tea, Earl mm-hmm. Grey.
So bergamot, and we've had really remarkable case of one patient who had a cholesterol. This is a patient who has a really high propensity, very unusual, to super high cholesterol, 500-600. And
wow.
It was a female who, ordinarily it's men who have such high cholesterols. But she even had cholesterol deposits on her knuckles.
Yes.
And on her eyelids, yellow deposits, so mm-hmm. very unusual condition, which you can actually spot during a physical exam. Very high rate of cardiovascular disease in her family. So she took the maximum dose of Lipitor, 80 milligrams of Lipitor, got her cholesterol down to 500.
Oh, my.
And then, she got her cholesterol down to 420. Mm-hmm. Got her cholesterol down to 420 from what it was, which is ridiculously high. So what do you do for that person? Well, we put her on bergamot just one twice daily. I got it down to 340, which is not good, but that was a dramatic improvement.
Yeah, that's significant.
Yeah. So, which shows that it really does work. Now, that's putting it to work in a case that's like the acid test for cholesterol lowering. So that was good. And also in the European review, it came up positive. Mm-hmm. Pantothene came up positive.
Yes.
And
Vitamin B5.
Mm-hmm. And you have to take about 1,600 milligrams of pantothene
for it
to work, or maybe 3,200 milligrams, so you have to take a lot.
Yeah.
What else came up positive? They looked at garlic. Garlic lowers cholesterol a little bit, but it's not that effective.
But it can help keep arteries clear if cholesterol is the cause. No question, it has other benefits.
Fish oil does not lower cholesterol.
But maybe triglycerides a little bit.
Definitely lowers triglycerides.
Yeah, but not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't have cereal for breakfast and a sandwich at lunch and pasta at dinner and expect your triglycerides
but again,
to come
like
down.
Garlic, there's heart benefits to that.
Mm-hmm.
So what they concluded at the end of that, and they talked about a couple of other things, but less, I think, popular things.
Mm-hmm.
Google lipids, I didn't think showed up on that. They used to be popular, but Google lipids.
I remember when they were popular.
You have to take a lot of Google lipids, like grams and grams of Google lipids to absorb your cholesterol. But maybe that's not good for your digestion.
Right.
So, bottom line, what do we got? We got red yeast rice, mm-hmm. we've got pantothene, we've got bergamot, and we've got
cholestipure and plant sterols.
Plant sterols that are the main players, I think, in terms of lowering cholesterol.
Yeah.
And not that things like resveratrol and curcumin and green tea and olive leaf aren't helpful. Mm-hmm. They're not so much for lowering cholesterol. They're for the anti-inflammatory effect and endothelial protection, shall we say.
And then the good old Metamucil, if you take it twice a day.
Oh, they looked at oat bran too. They thought oat bran could lower cholesterol too. But then it's not that pleasant. Plus, if you eat a lot of carbs, that's not so great either.
That would just make you a loaded.
I mean, it's like
you
eat the entire box of Cheerios every day.
But you have to eat
like two boxes of Cheerios a day to get that amount of oat bran. And if you ever had oat bran, it's not that great.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So what they concluded was interesting. They said all these things have been demonstrated to lower cholesterol, but we don't know if they reduce cardiovascular disease.
Ha. And there lies the rub.
And because they've done research with niacin, niacin definitely lowers cholesterol, but in one pretty prominent study, it didn't reduce cardiovascular risk. Mm. So it's just like some of these things that seem to enhance bone density, but they don't reduce risk. You know, the picture on your x-ray, on your DEXA scan looks better, but the same number of fractures occur.
Hmm.
And those are agents that maybe make the bone look thicker, but it's more brittle. It's not strong.
Yeah. And speaking of niacin, just like with a statin or red yeast rice, you still want to monitor liver function. I don't know if you would to a lesser degree, but probably not. I think it would matter about, it would depend on the dose. I think of niacin as well.
Let's take the time to allow one of our sponsors to share this message. Here we go.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make this free broadcast possible. So, I wanted to conclude. There was a story that I was going to discuss, one of the things that I posted this week, which has to do with, actually, it's a theme that you picked up, which is the cell phones, how smartphones hijack our minds. Mm. And you were talking about this last week.
Yes.
That cell phones actually have been demonstrated to make us stupid.
Yes. Our smartphones are making us dumb.
Our smartphones are making us dumb. And they actually did experiments where the smartphone wasn't even on. It was just turned off. Just the presence of the smartphone made us less smart.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. One is that we tend to offload our brains to the smartphones. We don't bother to learn things because we can look them up.
We don't memorize phone numbers anymore, which is a little bit frightening. Not everybody's, but, you know, even mom or sister or something. Oh, I got to look it up.
I will wager anything that a classically trained physician in the year 1900, or let's pick an even number, like 1917,
okay,
had at his or her disposal, mostly his in those days, far more information in their brains than kids who graduate from medical school today. Not that kids who graduate from medical school today, they know how to look it up.
But get it immediately.
But you would, if every doctor in those days could tell you all the cranial nerves, every muscle in the body, every artery and vein in the body, they had to memorize this stuff. And, you know, also school kids would recite speeches and poems. And this is a lost art.
That's true. I remember reciting poems and speeches and stuff like that in school. That is all gone, isn't it?
So it's changing our brains in a way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's actually getting to the point where we're reaching what's the term is synchronicity with the machines. We're becoming androids in a way.
Yeah.
Because we are inseparable from these devices that extend our capabilities, but at the same time, they may weaken our innate capabilities, and that's the price that we pay.
Right. It's alarming, the dependence on those devices and the anxiety that is caused. There are even studies that show that not having your device available cause anxiety,
I'll just tell you, this weekend I went to my weekend house, and I haven't been for a while, and I went to the house, and so the night I got there, everything was fine. I was on the internet, and I followed the, sports, and I did all this stuff, and then I woke up, and nothing worked, and what had happened was, for some reason, the internet company, our carrier, never received our bill, and we keep sending, and they don't.
It's Cablevision, right?
Yeah, it's on Long Island.
Yeah.
It's
Cablevision.
They're having some problems.
Oh, my.
So they turned off our service, and I went nuts. Oh. Even though, and I said, I got to get out of this house. I can't stand being in this house because I can't read my paper. I can't look up anything.
Right.
I can't post any of my, fun stuff on, facts and articles on Facebook.
Yeah.
I felt like absolutely devastated.
No. Out of sorts and everything.
Yeah.
My.
So I went for a run. You know, it's like, what else can you do?
Yeah. There are occasions where I would forget my cell phone at home. Those days seemed I was more calm. Not that I'm not a calm person.
Okay.
But it's like, I don't have it to look at, to go and look at to see if somebody texted me something or say my mother called me for some possible emergency or something like that. But
well, what you can, there are ways to control this. Is that one of the things you can do, and I heard it's interesting, is you can actually set your router. There are routers that are settable so that all stuff stops at a certain time.
Yeah.
And that's a good idea at night. And it's a good idea if you have kids, if you want the kids to actually come to the table and not be looking at their devices.
And texting each other while they sit next
right,
to each other.
Right.
Or even in the back seat of the car, not right. talking to one another.
Well, then they'll pass notes to each other.
You know, this lack of FaceTime is a detriment mm-hmm. to us as human beings. I mean, at no other time in history. It's a kind of, at the one hand, it's a kind of social isolation, but on the other hand, to be able to reach out into the cloud and reach more people.
It's a mixed blessing.
It's another.
And you know what I have to say, though, mm-hmm. in defense of it, this is, you know, it's ironic we're talking about this as many people are listening to this on their mobile devices on their
sure.
way to work or, you know, while they're doing their chores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's how we're exploiting this and that's our outreach. But also, it is so enabled my research.
Oh, yes.
I remember, you know, what a task it was to do research in college. I would have to go into the stacks
yeah.
at Columbia. And going into the stacks, there were jokes about it, is that people would go into the stacks and they'd never come out, you know, because they were so labyrinthine. You know, there were places that were, like, dark and cobwebby, and they were, like, there were these sort of rumors that there were sexual predators in there.
In
the stacks. You would go, and some, you'd go into the stacks for some illicit liaison, you know,
right.
and so it was a daunting thing, and you'd
yeah.
open up some dusty book, you know, and you'd start sneezing because it'd be nobody has
right.
opened it up in 20 years, you know,
the
to find some scientific study or reference
yeah.
that nobody had ever looked
yeah.
into for decades. And you know, now it's like if I want to see a study from like 1935, bang, I've got it.
That's it at yeah. your fingertips.
Right.
Don't have to have a copy of it. Don't have to.
I don't get jumped in the stacks, you
yeah.
know.
I like the musty smell of old paper
oh, yeah.
in libraries. It's just a familiar, yeah. But well, yeah, you don't have to go to the library
if you don't have
anymore.
Mold allergy. Well, anyway, we digress, but that's what we do best
yes.
here on these podcasts. So
yes.
we invite you to send your email to us, radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll endeavor to answer as many questions as we can next time.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Layla, for joining us, and thanks, audience, for listening.
Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.